Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, as always, there is Bill Graham.
Woo!
And following the melee of comments after our podcast on the childhood of a leader, we have summarily executed Amanda Waltz, and she has been replaced with Michael Snydell. Michael, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well.
Are you ready to take over the seat that was vacated in blood by Amanda Waltz?
I mean, it's a big seat, but I'll try not to make as many people mad.
You know what's funny? We didn't have her on for like two episodes in a row, and we had a bunch of people yelling at us to get her back on. And then we had a bunch of people yelling at us because she didn't like The Childhood of a Leader. And that's one of the things I love about this podcast, is that we can talk about the surface-level controversial film Ghostbusters and get literally no tweets or comments. But we talk about one film that takes place in two languages and is directed by Brady Corbet, and suddenly everything goes crazy.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. There were three languages. There was a little German in there.
Oh, there is some German in there. This is true. So that's why we love you people, all you crazy, crazy listeners out there. Thank you so much for making this one of the most unpredictable podcasts on Earth. And, we're always happy to hear from you. We got some unhappy people who were just straight mean, but I would say that the bulk of the comments were actually super constructive and interested in talking about the film and hashing out some of the issues.
The bulk is what you're saying.
Yeah. The bulk of us were pretty great. We had some good conversations. The same cannot be said for the new review we got on iTunes, which just reads, "Time for new co-hosts." And then this person takes a very weird tone and says, Brian, you got to get rid of these weird, annoying co-hosts like Nick and Amanda. They continue on. It's a one-star review. But I always say I'll read reviews out loud on this. So even a one-star gets a shout-out.
It's interesting, though, because you did kind of get a new co-host. Hi, listener, whoever you are. I was not named in that review. I don't know why.
You're fine. But whenever Nick or Amanda are on, it's weird. Also, I should let all of Amanda's rabid fans know that she's not actually dead. She will be back. She just didn't want to watch Jason Bourne.
And I don't blame her.
Now,
spoilers.
we've introduced the two co-hosts who are here with me, but we have another presence on this podcast today, and that is Mubi. I know. We today are sponsored by Mubi. I'm listening to all of you through your headphones right now saying, Brian, what on earth is Mubi? Well, let me tell you. Mubi is a curated online cinema streaming a selection of exceptional cult, classic, and award-winning films from all around the world. Every day they introduce a new hand-picked gem that you have 1 month to watch. And this summer, Mubi is actually showing an ongoing retrospective devoted to the work of Werner Herzog, who Amanda said she would be very sad when he died, and we all agreed. So, auteur Werner Herzog is on Mubi right now. Not only that, there's a summer concert special with a new musical documentary every week, and a series featuring the work of Kelly Reichardt. But one of the things that I'm most excited about on Mubi right now is actually a retrospective of the films of the Quay brothers. Mm. I believe that is how you say their last name. They are the animation, like they're identical twin directors who dabble in animation. And actually, Christopher Nolan was responsible for helping to restore a number of their films because they were such an influence on him.
Dang.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Mubi is the only place that you can go to see these newly restored works. Not only that, guys, let's be real. Netflix is a war zone of usually very low quality films. And there's just so much on there that you don't know what to watch. Same with Hulu. Same with Amazon. There is something that is known as, I believe, choice paralysis, which is what happens when you have too many options.
Who hasn't been there on that Friday night when you're scrolling through Netflix and you're like, I'm going to start this. And then you realize, no, maybe I should start that.
I think so, I probably spent like the amount of time of full movies just looking for something.
Yes. Right.
And then what do? You just end up watching reruns of Parks and Rec anyway. Now, MUBI, a new film every day. You have 30 days to watch. It's pretty awesome. But I know what you're saying. You're concerned. You don't want to sign up for another thing. Well, I've got great news for you. You can try MUBI right now, free, for 30 days. That is a full cycle of films. All you have to do is go to MUBI.com/filmstage. That, again, is MUBI.com/filmstage. Also, just so you know, you can actually download these movies onto your phone. This is one of the reasons I like it. I have been a member of MUBI for like 3 years, so I'm super psyched that we're actually being sponsored by them. You can download it onto your phone, so you don't have to be on your Wi-Fi watching this. You can download it, watch it on the metro.
Or you can take it over to some friend's house.
Yeah, make them watch it. It's awesome. MUBI.com/filmstage. Get on it, guys. We're offering you a free 30-day trial, and you should take advantage. Because what in life is truly free? All right. That's it. That's all we have now. I'll remind everyone to follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Follow us on Facebook, The Film Stage Show, and email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. But now, the reason that we are all here, it is time to talk about Jason Bourne. I was going to say the fourth film. But that kind of discounts the fact that the Bourne Legacy came out.
No, we don't talk about the Bourne Legacy.
Okay, so
I mean, even the movie doesn't recognize that it exists. So
does slightly. It makes mention of the programs that were mentioned in the Bourne Legacy, but Aaron Cross is nowhere to be found. Oh, anyway, okay. Let's get into
Was that his name?
Yeah,
oh, goodness.
I'm pretty sure. Let's talk about the newest Bourne film featuring Matt Damon, directed by Paul Greengrass, and that is Jason Bourne.
I know who I am.
When we have finished with you, you'll no longer be yourself.
Remembering everything doesn't mean you know everything.
Tell me.
So that is the trailer for Jason Bourne. A return to the Bourne series for Matt Damon and director Paul Greengrass. Let's talk about it. Our spoiler-free thoughts first before we dive into spoilers. Michael, why don't you kick us off? What did you think of Jason Bourne?
Well, I was going into it a fan of the first three. I've seen Bourne Legacy, but honestly remember next to nothing about it. Actually, it was on FX a couple nights ago, and I swear I mean to take a bad joke. I mean, I had as bad an amnesia as Jason Bourne when rewatching it. So what I'd say about Jason Bourne is that even more so than, sequels get a really bad rap for, you know, feeling like diminishing returns and feeling like they're really padding out a story that's just not there. And I think from the beginning and throughout, Jason Bourne never actually feels like much of an actual movie. I wrote the review for this, and honestly, I spent 20 minutes trying to figure out how to describe the plot because it's so fun.
I mean, this is a problem that I would say most of the Bourne films have had.
Yes, but somehow they got around it, and somehow I remember enjoying each of the trilogy iterations. Now, I never got around to Legacy, so I can't comment on it. But yeah.
You know, I mean, I will say I actually watched Bourne Ultimatum even a few hours before I went to see the new one just because I wanted
That sounds like a real bad mistake.
it was a terrible mistake. And like, I mean, I guess I know we'll probably get into it, but I think a big thing that we can talk about is the fact that the editor and the writer for the first time is the same person. Good thing I have the guy's name, but Christopher Rouse. So Christopher Rouse, this is the first time that he is co-writing and the editor. And I think that's a major problem with the storytelling. Cause I'm sorry.
I can't remember the last time I've ever heard of a writer also serving as an editor, except maybe in like a situation with Steven Soderbergh or something like that, where he's also like the cinematographer and stuff like
Ben
that.
Ben Wheatley is one example I can think of. Amy Jump is the editor and writer for almost all of his films. Not all of them. Yeah, but I guess what I just say is that like the editing, at
this
least
this is his first writing credit too.
Yes, because I think Tony Gilroy was responsible for the first three, and they couldn't throw enough money at him to come back. But I guess I'm still trying to process my own feelings about it because it's kind of interesting that the storytelling feels so anticipatory. In the sense of, I feel like the editing is always moving to the next thing, and the writing is trying to catch up at every moment. I don't know how you guys felt, but I'd definitely like to, hash it out a little bit.
I mean, here's the problem with every Bourne film. You have a series of films that's devoted to a guy who is a super spy, but has absolutely no interest in doing that thing. until the people who he used to work for try to murder him, which it's the weirdest thing to build a series around, and it didn't really strike me until this one like how much these movies are really all about Matt Damon really trying just not to do something anymore. And in the books, and it's impossible and dumb to really talk about the books versus the movies when the Bourne series is concerned because they're so different. But in at least the first book, he was still trying to take down a terrorist at the same time that the government was trying to track him down, and there was some question if he was the terrorist that he was actually searching for. And in this, it's like, no, everyone just assumes that he's a rogue agent when really he just got shot once. And then he becomes a rogue agent because they keep trying to kill him. And every time that he just tries to not be involved, something happens and he gets involved. And so you talk about things like story, and it's not a concept that I attach to the Bourne films. It's a series of globe-trotting action scenes tied together by a very, very thin plot. I mean, the first one, he's just trying to figure out who he is and what the hell happened and survive. And then I think the second one, he's sort of still doing that thing. And I know it ends with him apologizing to the daughter of some people that he killed, which is a fairly nice way to kind of wrap things up for him. And then the third one, I literally don't remember. I know he did work at some point. But, like, there's enough style and substance to the nonsense that it still was great, and I still enjoyed all of those films. And I sort of enjoyed this one, but it, for the first time, really caught me, like, just how I didn't know what it was moving towards. Like, I just was, at some point in the middle of this film, like, well, we haven't had the big car chase yet.
Sure.
And he hasn't had the hand-to-hand fight yet. So once we've done those two things, the movie, for all intents and purposes, should be over, except for that final little twist where he proves how ahead of everyone else he is, and then Extreme Ways starts playing.
Well, like, I would agree with you. Like, I think I'm not recognizing that the Bourne series has often been about motion, but like, I think the other thing is that the like larger themes that this one kind of starts to push towards, we'll talk about it more, but you know, in terms of the subplot with Riz Ahmed, as well as, you know, it's difficult again to talk about these storylines, but the point is that they're like going towards larger themes about technology that the movie does not remotely deserve and are interesting on their own part. I kind of want the movie, you know, that involves Riz Ahmed. I want it to be a lot smarter about like basic computer literacy. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of people joking about, you know, how when they are hacking and things like that, it has the computer literacy of, you know, what your grandpa thinks hacking is.
Yeah.
And
well, we tried a more grounded hacking film once and it was Black Hat and no one liked it.
See, I actually really like Black Hat.
Oh, I love Black Hat. Don't get me wrong.
We got a show. We got a show that's doing it though, and it's called Mr. Robot. So that one has been very critically well received, and I guess kind of commercially, because it's, you know, it's definitely made some waves. I don't know if that's just because I'm surrounded by kind of the critical circle or not, but I know a lot of people that are aware of that show that would not be aware of a show on USA otherwise.
Right.
So,
I don't know. I love Royal Pains, so.
Okay. Well, you know. Get them as a sponsor.
I was going to say, the joke now is that no one knows what Royal Pains is, when the joke was supposed to assume that someone knew Royal Pains.
Isn't it about that older doctor who's kind of resting on his laurels, like, you know, in like Charleston or some type
the
of,
Hamptons?
You know, very, okay, Hamptons. I was close
Charleston.
Enough.
I don't know. These are all cities that I'm not aware of, so.
Well, I just, you know,
it's 100% unimportant.
He's living the life.
Yeah.
Well, I guess... you know, you mentioned Black Hat, and I want to say that, like, you know, I after seeing this movie, all I could think was, you know, I underrated Black Hat. I thought I liked Black Hat, but it just made me think of, you know, this movie is so flat in terms of, you know, for how much time is spent, like, looking at monitors and, like, you know, flashing back and forth between, you know, Alicia Vikander and Tommy Lee Jones, you know, in these control centers and talking to these, you know, various groups and talking about, you know, these cat and mouse chases. But like all of this is presented in such a dull, tedious way of just, you know, icons on a screen. And, you know, I was thinking back to Black Hat, which, you know, has its own problems for sure, but like, you know, makes technology into, you know, this almost spiritual relationship, you know, whether it's like going into circuit boards and, you know, recognizing all of this technology as a larger, you know, allegory of connection and things like that. And Jason Bourne like constantly seems like it's edging towards that, but doesn't have anything to say about it.
Bill Grimm, you have been uncharacteristically silent. What were your thoughts on Jason Bourne?
I thought that this film had some issues right from the beginning, because immediately it starts to do flashbacks and immediately it starts to do all sorts of narrative padding that you become very aware of, because even though I've seen the first three movies, these flashbacks, I just couldn't put together why he was having them at this moment. And it seems awfully convenient that Julia Stiles kind of stumbles into his lap right in time for her to give him some information to go chase. And I'm like, really? Like, the other films had some flashback moments, and sure, they had some things like that, but they were more during the quiet times of his life where he was actually trying to reflect back. And it was to the point where it was like, oh, he had already remembered everything that was kind of important at that moment, right? That was the whole point of Ultimatum, was he was on their doorstep and he was kind of like, hey, I know exactly what y'all did, you know, and here I am. And this film is like, well, let's catch up with him. Let's see what he's doing. And it's like, no, that's not interesting at all. He's trying to live a quiet life, and he's just drug right back into this. And you're just like, I would personally love to see him be rusty at some of these aspects, and yet somehow he's just silky smooth all the time, no matter what.
That's,
you know,
actually a super good point, because he comes from a much more analog world than this. Because one of the things I did like about this movie was how it kind of updated some of the technological nonsense that the CIA does.
Well, one thing that it did that I really kind of enjoyed was Alicia Vikander has a moment where she's telling this asset who's basically serves as an assassin. They call him the asset. He's played by Vincent Cassel. And she's telling him, and it reminded me a lot of the opening sequence of Spy. She's telling him where to go, how to do it, you know, which angle to take and where to look to kind of track down Jason Bourne.
Right. She's
and
I was like using Waze to figure out where Bourne will go so she can get the asset to go somewhere he can.
She's like, we're getting reports of traffic here. Turn left, you know.
There's
and
such
you're
a,
just
like, mechanical quality to the way that all of the characters work. I mean, Jason Bourne, as well as Vincent Cassel, as you're saying, like, I think you're like totally onto something when you're saying that it's like that spy scene, because I mean, like, at a certain point, they're not even acting on their own. I mean, I suppose Jason Bourne less, because, you know, he's on his own, but Vincent Cassel is like, you know, he's like a remote control at a certain point.
Well, I think that there's something there for that, though. I mean, like, you know, Vincent Cassel's character is literally credited as asset. He is their asset on the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people, they're not really trained to be super creative. And it's interesting to see how, with the right amount of information, you can very easily predict how these trained people are going to respond. I think it probably would have been too on the nose, but it would have been interesting if they could have worked in the fact that Bourne is not entirely a pre-internet hero.
Sure.
Definitely isn't from this, you know, big data.
Yeah, it would have been interesting if they would have been able to just track his phone or just track some of these things that are kind of innocuous things.
But I did like that scene that you were describing, Bill, where she's kind of like, he's going to have to turn left, you know.
And
it's super, it's just weird.
Yeah, that's one of those moments that I think is actually like a really clever like seamless use of the technology and how it could be applicable to this kind of espionage kind of thriller situation, but they don't go with that very much more than this, you know, 10-minute action scene, which is kind of the peak moment for me. Everything from that moment beyond just kind of snowballs out of the way, and so overall, it was entirely watchable, but it was also entirely groan-inducing towards the end. It's not something that I would ever recommend someone watch unless they were just kind of a completionist. It does have some pretty good combat sequences. I guess this is I'll admit that I haven't watched any of the Bourne trilogy in quite a while, but I remember watching them and being thrilled by them. And even some of the flashbacks show some of his action sequences from the first three films in this. I do not remember them being this damn choppy. I mean, it's it's like they took the shaky cam aesthetic and just ramped it up. And
yeah,
and it does feel slightly more choppy.
And I was just like, wow, this is frenetic. This is what you unleashed on the world. This is not what you were.
This is a mean question, but do we think it's because Matt Damon has gotten older?
And so he wasn't actually doing a lot of his own action.
He's not as fast as he used to be, or they had to do more stunt work with
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. It's just a question I had.
I didn't necessarily make it that way. I think a weird thing, and I didn't notice this as much in Ultimatum, but like there's like a strange lack of establishing shots that really give you context. Like there are establishing shots, but like you are, it's sometimes like jumps from, you know, like an outside landscape shot to like inside a corridor, and you really have no sense. And then once you jump into an action scene, like you're feeling, you know, that motion and the camera's moving with every punch, but like you really have no sense of how it has a context to where he was seconds before.
Usually that's not a problem for me. In this film, I did have a little bit of an issue with that in a climactic scene that involved different banks of elevators in a hotel. And I was just like, I now know that one of them is not working because he made it not work. But like the other guy has to go to a different one, but I don't know what that's going to do for his time other than make it longer.
Yeah.
But I have no way to track his progress.
Sure.
I don't know. In general, I enjoyed this movie. I won't say I guess I liked it. I don't know. I went to this movie expecting a Bourne film, and I got it, which is more than I can say for the Bourne Legacy, which, you know, if everyone remembers, was about a junkie trying to get an eternal hit. And, you know, as much as I like Jeremy Renner, as much as I like Rachel Weisz, that movie just didn't work for me because the point where it ended felt like a true Bourne movie's end of second act.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually a Bourne movie ends with, I'm going to bust this thing wide open, and then he does in some way, either emotionally or actually. And that movie ends with them on a boat being like, what's our next move? And then Extreme Ways starts playing. And it was like, no, wait, you know, he just because he's got drugs now, but he still has to like blow the program wide open somehow. And they don't do that. And as we said in this movie, the only hint that that movie ever even happened is the fact that Outcome and Larks are like name checked on a list, but never spoken aloud. But no, I mean, what do I look for in a Bourne movie? I look for hand to hand combat. I look for globe hopping, you know, a small scale either foot chase or bike chase followed by a larger scale car chase. You know, I need a group of people furiously clacking on computers as the people stand behind them looking at monitors and screens on the wall saying, find him. Where is Bourne?
So what you needed was the first 20 minutes and the last 20 minutes smashed together.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
And that would have been your 40-minute episode of TV, and you would have been like, holy shit, give me more of that.
Yeah, ideal Bourne movie would basically just be, I don't know, like Anthony Bourdain, except he's a fist fighter.
I would definitely watch this, Brian, just saying.
Okay, great. Well, I'll talk to Anthony. We'll get it working. Yeah, I mean, you know, something like that whole scene where he is meeting his contact during some austerity riots in Greece, and just the way that, you know, he's using the crowd and they've got cameras and they're tracking him, like that's vintage great Bourne. And then, you know, everything kind of slows down a little too much until they get to Las Vegas at the end. You know, everything that happens in Germany and London was kind of a loss for me.
Sure. No, I'm sorry. Can we just bring up, I don't know if I was alone with this. I was honestly a little bit uncomfortable with the whole Grease thing. I mean, maybe we should get into this in spoilers, but just that context just made me feel a little bit uncomfortable. I don't know if it's just the timing and, you know, the production. I mean, I can't say it gels when, you know, when everything kind of went bottoms up, you know, in real life Grease, but, you know, that whole scene just it felt weirdly unearned. I don't know whether it's just within the context of the whole film, but just I was feeling a little bit uncomfortable, and I don't know if I was being oversensitive. I was just curious what you guys thought.
It's hard to know because it seems at first like they're trying to make a point with it, but it doesn't play into the rest of the movie in any way.
Unless
you want to talk about Tommy Lee Jones's character as like entrenched governmental management that doesn't understand the changing world and needs to be ousted violently, which is a real stretch, but I could probably write a think piece on.
Hot take.
It's a real hot take.
The thing about that is there's still pretty interesting stuff. I mean, the whole scene where Vincent Castle is on a rooftop, and I don't want to say anything more about the context, but like the fact that there's, you know, a clashing government interests, and, you know, they're like talking over each other and deciding, you know, how long it should be before they move the assets. And like that stuff is really interesting as it gets tangled up, which is, I guess, what you're talking about as well. But it just, the whole thing felt very strange to me.
Yeah, there's a certain level of bureaucracy in a Bourne film that I like. Again, it's all those people. There's always two government people, one of whom is slightly on his side and one of whom is definitely not on his side. And they're always like trying to understand what his motivation is. And really, usually it's these people are trying to kill me and I'd prefer not to die right now. I don't know. It's weird that they did the austerity riots. I liked the way it worked for the set piece in a purely aesthetic way.
Sure.
But yeah, ethically, it's a little strange. That's what they chose to do, especially when the rest of the movie seems to be a Prism, you know, Snowden reaction.
Sure.
You know, Pokemon Go is looking at all of our emails and tracking our every move. And, you know, there was the whole thing with the government wanting to get Apple to write them a backdoor into the San Bernardino shooter's phone. And this movie makes that kind of thing very explicit. With Riz Ahmed's character.
This could be worse than Snowden, Brian.
Oh, it could be. I mean, because Snowden was like, hey, they're following you and watching you. And this would be, they have super secret brainwashed assassins going to murder people. There's another thing that this movie does. And without getting too into it pre-spoilers, they try to make things more personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost always have a problem when a film tries to do that, and this one is no different.
Yeah, they did not succeed in that because we'll save that.
On that note, is there anything more to talk about pre-spoiler, or should we jump into it to talk about the issues we had there?
I will say I have some issues with the car chase scene overall, but the way it was filmed was pretty damn phenomenal.
The like, final one?
Yes.
Final. Okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed that. I thought it was fun. I didn't have too much trouble tracking what was going on.
I mean, I think it had an explosive finale, but like, I think I had a similar feeling as you, Brian, is like, this is the first experience I had with the Bourne film where I was thinking throughout, you know, like, I don't know what any of this amounts to. And right. I was actively thinking the last 20 minutes, like, man, I really wish I was invested in this rather than Bourne is technically cool.
I guess I'll hold off on my real problems with the finale until we get into spoilers. But yeah, it's definitely a thing of, I don't quite understand why most of this is still happening.
Yep.
That actually does fold into my issue with them trying to make it more personal.
And, there is a great moment right after that big finale, and they cut to the next day, and it's like nothing's happened, and you're just like, guys, I don't know if y'all just watched the movie that I watched. There was definitely something happening last night, and it was cocoa bananas, and y'all are all like worried about this other person.
One issue with the finale on just a pure entertainment level is that the Bourne films, in this world of thousands of people dying for every finale that we get in a superhero film, the Bourne films have always been a little more restrained.
Sure.
And Vincent Cassell's character, through his choice to drive through some standstill traffic, tips it a little too much.
It becomes the Revenant.
It's not just that. It's just the amount of car and car damage and possible human life lost during that scene is more than most Bourne films ever do. Because the Bourne films are usually pretty great at limiting collateral damage.
Yep.
And in this one, maybe they're trying to make it like, oh, he's just gone crazy because it's all personal now. But it was just a little too much. I think
they are the worst spies. Just saying.
Yeah, they are leaving their watermark all over the place.
This is true. Yeah. All right. Well, we've danced around it. We should jump into the spoiler section so that we can talk about some of our issues with the plot. I'd say.
Wait, I just wanted to say, guys, should we talk about the two new characters at all?
Oh, well, Alicia Vikander and Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, or do you want to just save that?
What the hell's up with Alicia Vikander's voice?
What? I don't know.
No one else found her voice a little weird?
No.
Okay, I'm crazy.
She'd have to have more of a part for me to honestly be bothered by it.
There was just something. There was something about her voice that was very foreign actress trying to be American.
Well, maybe that's what she was trying to do.
Yeah, but it was just such a weird. I liked it. I'm not going to lie. I liked it. I had no idea what was going on, but I was like, she's making a choice and I am down. Now, I will say that Tommy Lee Jones is somnambulant. But his like right hand man, whose character name is apparently Craig Jeffers, and is played by. I'm so sorry I'm about to butcher this name.
You want me to try it?
Asando?
Yeah, that seems right.
Okay, that's great. He has the perfect face for a like low-level government official in a Bourne movie.
Yes, yes.
Because he can give off both deep confusion and like vicious excitement in equal measures with just his eyes and his lips. And like that's all you need. To be like a B-level player in a Bourne film.
He's just the platonic ideal.
Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, we need to do a cut to him where we make the audience understand that Jason Bourne has gotten away. And he just like, he does it. And you're like, oh, things did not go well for the government in this particular case.
Yeah, you don't need voiceover. You just need to do like a little one shot of his face.
Seriously, you could have these entire movies and the only words that anyone could speak would be Bourne or Jason Bourne, as well as like how, where, what, and why, and that would be it.
Did I see that he has 25 lines of dialogue or something? Or was that a joke going around? Because I can completely believe Jason if Jason Bourne only has 25 lines of dialogue.
Yeah, usually. Because maybe, again,
that would be hilarious.
He's not
if
an
they
active agent in
that.
His own story.
Yeah. No. He's just reactive. That's all he's doing.
Yeah.
Sure.
He's like, it's like there are squirrels in my backyard. And if I were to chase one of them, that squirrel would be Jason Bourne.
And you'd be like, holy shit, that guy's really good.
Yeah. Both in terms of like agility and success, that squirrel would be Jason Bourne. And I don't have a problem with that. The second you start to question the plot of a Jason Bourne film, like Mission Impossible, James Bond, these movies begin with Bond making an active choice. I'm going to take down Blofeld or, you know, Ethan Hunt. I'm going to have to climb something really tall to get a computer disc. That's fine. You know what their stakes are. Jason Bourne, it seems like
they're human beings.
Just disappear into a mall and get a Jamba Juice, he'd be fine. So yeah, that's you know, that's where I'm at. So yeah, speaking of which, let's get into spoilers. Let's talk about this. I will again say, I think if you're a fan of the Jason Bourne series, there's nothing wrong with this film. It doesn't, for instance, have anything new, but it is a new film and it's been a while, so maybe you're down for that. And it made a lot of money, so people apparently are.
We'll see. We'll see how much money it makes next week, huh?
Yes.
I thought I saw 60 million is the last thing I saw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which pretty is impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right, so spoilers. And this is where I get to really sound negative.
Yeah.
We find in the course of this movie that his father was the analyst who put forward the idea of Treadstone, which was the program that created Jason Bourne out of David Webb.
I couldn't groan hard enough if I tried during that part.
Yeah. And then, so that, we find that out. And then we find out later that Vincent Cassell's character was actually caught, captured, and tortured because of Bourne's whistleblowing, which at the moment I was like, oh, that's a super good idea. Yeah. Because we've never seen the collateral damage that his actions have caused.
Sure.
And so, like, making this dude view him as a traitor is really good. Because that's, like, the one time that Bourne actually did something, and it wasn't just people being shocked that he was still alive. But then we find out that Vincent Cassell killed his father.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we get that in a scene where he just happens to remember the face of someone that he couldn't remember previously. So we don't even know if it's real.
My biggest issue is, and a lot of the second half of the film kind of hinges on this kind of dramatic revelation and the fact that they now, like, realize that they hate each other so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, and Cassell is like, oh, you're a traitor, and Bourne's just pissed off but the whole time I'm like, guys, if you have been super agents and the entire time you've been given someone to kill and you don't question it. So what's the difference between Jason Bourne's dad for Vincent Cassell and anyone else that Vincent Cassell is killing? Because it becomes very clear in this film, the way that Alicia Vikander uses him, tells him where to go, how to get there, things like that, that he's willing and able to be just a remote control, like, you know, super weapon, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like he is not doing his own research and figuring out why we're killing someone. No, he's just told to kill someone, and he's cool, whatever.
He is told that he is going to get a shot at Jason Bourne, but yeah, sure. He's got a guy bound and beat up in the bathtub. I mean, I don't feel like he's really breaking his moral imperative just to go after Jason Bourne.
Yeah. And so I just feel like Bourne should kind of realize and be like, hey, bro, like, did you actually know that my father was, like, innocent, or did you kill him because you were tasked with killing him?
Well, that's
because otherwise I got no beef. Like, I can't blame you for it. Right.
That's the crazy thing, though, is that the movie ends with Bourne chasing Cassell or Castle. I guess we're going to need the universe to tell us how to pronounce it.
I'm sure the internet will help.
It really feels like it should be the other way around, because Cassell has 2 years worth of torture.
Yep.
To have to take out on Jason Bourne, and you know Jason Bourne's just got his dead dad. You know,
I got a real problem
with that.
Vague memories of his dead dad. He didn't even have like a relationship, like remembrance of it. You know,
still not clear on exactly how good his memory is, because I couldn't tell if he was getting like fever dream flashbacks or if he was just remembering.
Yeah.
At any given point in this movie.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
No. I was going to move on, but if you're staying here, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to say, I think one thing about Cassell too is that it kind of points out, like, I don't think Cassell's motivation is great, as you guys are pointing out, for a bunch of reasons, but like, it points out how terrible the motivation is for other characters like Tommy Lee Jones, who is like, you know, he has, you know, such a grudge against Bourne from the first moment and is willing to, you know, sabotage any possible, not friendship, but, you know, bringing him in or anything like that. And it's especially weird because this is the first time we've met him. And I think that Cassell character just points out how much more poorly defined the other motivations in the movie are and how forced they are.
Sure, like Heather Lee. Like, what the hell?
Sure.
What is her motivation? Just power?
It really seems like she's kind of in a power grab. But this is the Alicia Vikander character.
I think there's a better way to go about that than killing your boss. I don't know.
It's really hard to tell with her, because part of her... I was actually kind of hoping that she would actually talk Bourne into coming back.
Yes. I was looking forward to that.
Yeah, I was on board. I was like, if he becomes a CIA operative again, that's going to be a real shift.
Yeah.
But instead, he just walks away and Extreme Ways plays.
a remix, like an of actual a spy movie with Jason Bourne, like actually doing operations. So that sounds pretty good,
right? But it's there's no reason for him to do that unless he's like back with the CIA. Because at this point, everyone is dead. I can't think of another person.
There's no loose ends,
right? Like every person who was a part of his training and his recruitment is dead. It seems like I can't think of a single person who remains alive who he would have a reason to deal with.
Except that German dude, right? That German dude still.
Oh
no, yeah. No.
Oh
no, he's dead. I forgot that.
That was a pretty good fight. That was probably my favorite. Well, that was one of my favorite fights in the movie. You know, of the three fights in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say though, as much as I enjoyed just the practical effects of that SWAT vehicle running down the main street and yes, kind of Bourne's car taking battle damage throughout, and you could tell, you know, it didn't exactly slow down at any point, but you know, you could see some damage on the vehicle and
sure,
and it was hopping over lanes and doing all this crazy stuff, and I was like, okay, I'm into this. And halfway through that, I realized, wait, so if Castle is basically running away and Bourne is giving chase, and I know what's going to ultimately happen. They're going to end up fighting at the end of this. And I'm like, what are y'all doing? Why don't you just pull over and fight each other right now? Like, why is this happening?
That's the thing. I don't know why he's trying to get away from Bourne and why Bourne is trying to get him. Because it really feels like those roles should be reversed.
Exactly.
And the craziest thing is, when they were fighting in that sewer,
yeah, whatever the hell that is,
I really wanted them to stop and talk. You know,
no, this is not Batman.
Just hug it out,
man.
No,
they don't get to talk here.
I needed like one of those scenes where, like, you know, and this is gonna sound dumb, but like when two people are shooting each other and they both are undercover.
Yeah.
And then they just shout at each other.
It's the
heat.
Or you want heat. Right?
I either want heat or I want just, you know, two people who are still right about, yeah, like, and then it would be the moment where in a really poorly written film, one of them would go, you know, we're not so different, you and I. But I really wanted, I wanted Castle, I don't even know anymore. I wanted Vinny C to say, you know, I killed your dad, yeah, but I was doing what I was told, just like you did all those 32 times
exactly
that you killed other people.
Exactly.
And that, you know, it wasn't anything personal. And then I wanted Bourne to say, like, well, I only got all those names out there because the CIA kept trying to murder me. It wasn't anything personal. I don't even know who you are.
And then they stand up and Strange Ways plays.
I just needed, like, I wanted there to be a human moment where the point and the impact of all of this insanity really played out. Because, like I said, the climax of one of the previous films was him meeting this Russian woman and just mm-hmm. saying, like, you know, you've been living with the idea that your dad killed your mom. Here's the real truth. I murdered both of them. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And then he walks away, and then Extreme Ways plays. And, I mean, that was a great ending. And I would have loved something like that where they both just said, we've done all this stupid shit because we were told to, we don't have to do that, and then mm-hmm. to walk away, or, you know.
Yeah, for them to have some agency.
Yeah, if at that point Vinny C wanted to, like, pull out a knife and then Bourne shoots him Indiana Jones style, that'd be fine. But there should have been something else there.
You guys are making me sad for the movie that could have been.
Yeah. It's just weird because for how much they tried to make it personal, and this really could be, you know, Jason Bourne, this time it's personal. You know, I don't think we've ever heard his father's name in connection with the CIA before.
No, sure.
Retconning that I tend to detest. But at the same time, on a purely action level, this movie gave me everything I wanted, so I can't be too mad at it. But it's annoying. And
We still haven't talked about the incredibly annoying, you know, other time they try to make it personal.
The what?
Which is Julia Stiles.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I was just about to get to that because.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're right.
No,
you're
that's
right.
A good segue. Common segue.
Yeah. Who the hell is DeSalt? And why the hell are we supposed to give a shit about what he's doing?
He's like a WikiLeaks kind of guy.
Yeah, but like they Julia Stiles like says his name and she's like, get to DeSalt. And he's like, DeSalt? Oh, okay. And you're like, who the fuck is DeSalt? And they don't tell you
anything. DeSalt's gonna get you killed.
Yeah, they don't tell you anything about who this guy is. And the entire movie leading up to meeting him, I was like, okay, who is this guy? I don't remember a DeSalt. Why don't I remember a DeSalt? And then I'm literally looking at the IMDb right now, and several people's names have the little like blue line, you know, hyperlink.
Right, yeah.
His name does not, because he's not in any of the other films. And I'm just like, what? Like, so he doesn't have anything to do with it.
Here's how I knew who Christian DeSalt was, because his name is phonetically similar to Julian Assange.
I guess. Yeah. I did think it was hilarious how she says, I put malware on the data.
Oh my god.
And I'm like, okay, here's three quick things that I noticed. A, she had 77% before they shut that fucker down. So I don't know how she has complete files of anything. B, you cannot have malware on a computer that, like, I guess her malware turns on Wi-Fi, because why would you take an encrypted disk and be like, bro, cool, let me turn Wi-Fi on and then shove it into my computer? No, you would keep that thing off of the internet, right?
Yeah, you'd want an air-gapped computer. But here's the thing.
Well, hold on.
I have literally no idea, because they couldn't hack into his computer. They had to hack into his phone. So the
and that was
idea
my third
there
thing.
Would
that
be that his phone
thing.
Was air-gapped.
Okay. But here, well, they knew as soon as he plugged it in that the malware was activated, because it pinged. And so it wasn't the phone. It was his computer, which was connected to the internet. And you're like, what? Why is your phone or your computer connected to the internet? And yet they can't get into his computer. So they hack into his phone
and
tell his phone to delete. My phone has that capability? What?
I need Bluetooth? Like, I don't know. Like, look, I have...
this
every
is
time,
blowing my mind right now.
Every time that I hear or see something in a movie where I'm like, that seems stupid, I find out that it's real. So, like, when we all watched Live Free or Die Hard, and a hacker made a gas pipeline explode, I was like, that's dumb. And then it happened. And then... you know, a nuclear facility is destroyed in Black Hat, and people were like, come on. And then it turns out that Stuxnet, which was made by the Americans and the Israelis, did that to the Iranians. So sure, I guess. I'm just going to assume that someone could hack my phone and delete something off my computer. Like, I don't know enough about computers to make any judgments on that level. Apparently, you can still... find information on an air gap computer if you're able to listen to its fan. Am I going crazy? Did anyone else read this article about this?
I
can't. I'll try to tweet it out so that people don't think I'm just lying. But yeah, it was something about how the fan noise of a computer could be used to get over the fact that it's air gapped.
That is, but cocoa bananas, as
it's,
I like to
oh,
say.
It's completely insane. And they tried explaining it, and I was like, I can't. Yeah, there's a Wired article from June 28th, 2016.
Look,
the title
look,
is, Clever Attack Uses the Sound of a Computer's Fan to Steal Data.
I mean, I'll be honest with you.
I have no idea.
This is my own personal history. I still don't understand how anyone ever discovered how photography works. So a lot of this technology stuff is, you know, like, I have a rudimentary understanding of how it works. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I can unscrew this and like plug that in. And, you know, I'm pretty handy with electronics. But if you ask me like the nuts and bolts of it, I'm like, I don't know.
I'm
no.
still weirded out by the fact that if my laptop has its Wi-Fi turned off and then the battery dies completely, if I plug it back in and turn it on, it somehow still knows what the right time is. Like, that's the level of technological illiteracy I'm dealing with. So
sure.
I don't have a problem sometimes giving up.
Guys, yeah. I don't know about you, but honestly, like, I honestly don't care whether the technology, you know, is as complicated as something like, I don't know, primers for some reason, what's coming to my mind right now. But, sure. Like, I can suspend my disbelief, but, man, if you make it incredibly boring to watch you typing on a computer,
yeah, that's
I'm,
a real
I'm just not going to give a shit.
Again, Black Hat was super exciting with its typing. And, again, I don't have as much trouble with all that stuff as I do with for some reason we've given up and we've gone the, oh, he was fated to be a part of this. I mean,
sure.
One of the biggest problems that I had with The Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm really sorry that I even have to bring this up.
Oh, no.
The fact that, like, oh, Peter Parker's dad was working on something and Peter has something in his DNA. And so he's like the only one who could become the Spider-Man. And that I felt that in this movie.
Yeah.
Where it's like, ooh, I'm looking at a document and I realize that this crazy shit that's been happening to me is because my dad did something.
Yeah.
So here's my question, because my biggest railing against The Amazing Spider-Man, from what I know, that was an exclusive Mark Webb development, right? That was not in any of the comics history.
Exclusive.
And you have 75 years of Spider-Man like storyline to go off of, and you're like, no, I got this, bro. All right, I'm gonna run with this. And so I'm curious if this idea of Jason Bourne's dad, David Webb's dad, is in the books, because I read most of the first one. I gave up shortly after that. So I haven't read the other books, but Ludlum, and then after he passed away, or did he stop writing? I can't remember. No, he passed away.
I think he both stopped writing and died.
he stopped in that order. He did that in that order. Okay. Because I think usually one comes with the other. But okay, yeah. I'm just curious if any of his writing or any of the other guys' writings ever like touched on this, or if this is just them doing the Mark Webb special over again where they're just like, nah, I'm gonna come up with something creative. Cool.
I honestly don't know, because the Bourne books are the type of things where, you know, they handed it off to another writer and it became Robert Ludlum's Bourne, written in tiny print by Tom Smith or whatever.
Yeah.
And I know that I read the three Bourne books that he wrote and I enjoyed them, but I can't recall because they are densely plotted and there's stuff going on in there.
Is it fair to say they're like analogous to like Tom Clancy?
Yes.
I would say they're even more than Tom Clancy.
Yeah.
He is such a plot guy. I would say maybe like a more beachy John Le Carre.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Well, I should bring this up, guys. Yeah. What is the motivation of Julia Stiles at that? Like, I don't know.
I can't remember.
Trying to get out of those documents? Like, the documents she was looking for, I'm like, why are you guys acting like these are revelations? Like, it baffled me that they were...
The Iron Hand was the new one. I guess people still didn't know about Outcome and Larks and all the... I don't know.
My big question is, why did she light that computer on fire? Because
fucking cool.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
I was like, hold on. Like, okay, you downloaded it onto a disk.
Those poor hackers in Reykjavik were just like, hey, girl, is your computer working? And she pulls a gun on them and lights shit on fire.
I'm just like, okay, they saw your face, so you're not hiding your identity anymore. Yeah. What did you expect them to get off of that computer that you were also trying to put this information online ultimately anyways? And I'm just like, none of this is making any sense.
I don't know. There's a part of me that was like, I don't know, just put it on a Google Doc and send it out there.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. I don't know why anyone goes through WikiLeaks, because again, I'm technologically illiterate, but I guess that they have a vetting system and have proven themselves to be clever enough to host things like this.
Sure.
I really just don't know.
I don't remember
her personal involvement in all of this.
Sure.
Like, hey. Am I crazy? In one of the films, did they kind of hint that the fact that they used to be an item?
Well, I don't know if it's an item. I thought it was something with her brother or something along those
lines. That's even crazier.
Here, you know, I'm going to do some basic research so I don't look like an idiot.
Well, you do that. again, what is Heather Lee's, like, what does she actually think that she read a like small excerpt from a document written about Jason Bourne and immediately is like, no, I think we can bring him in. And Tommy Lee Jones is like, girl, you don't know shit about shit. Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, no, it's cool. I read this short little excerpt. I know what I'm talking about.
I don't know, but I liked the conflict that gave, because they did bring up the question of, like, this dude is pretty much a traitor. And at the same time, like, he doesn't quite want to be. And he obviously joined this thing for patriotic reasons. So there's an interesting idea to be had there, but they didn't bother to really chase it down. And this is, again, where I'll just plug in. I had fun. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I at no point did I ever want to, like, literally get up and walk away.
Right.
But this is – it was still a movie. By the end, I was just like, nothing happened in this movie at all.
Right. I need the next Bourne film to really, like, have him sit down and talk to someone so we can work out some of, like, his motivation and stuff.
You want a heart to heart.
What was that?
Yeah, heart to
you
heart.
You want a heart to heart.
Yeah. I want the next one to be like a Sopranos episode where he goes and talks to Dr. Melfi or something.
Oh my God. Can you imagine his therapy bills?
Oh my God. That would be incredible. Gosh.
This guy. This poor guy.
Well, like, I have.
Guys, I figured out.
Okay, please go on.
I figured out what Julia Stiles was, if you guys are interested.
Right. Yes. She was in the other films.
Yeah.
I can click on her name. Nikki Parsons.
So she's actually in Ultimatum, which is the one I watched last week. So yeah, my memory's great. So she was actually at
Treadstone.
Are
you a super agent?
Right. She was in all three of the other films that we're counting.
As far as like their most recent history, she's a Treadstone technician, mm-hmm. and they blow Treadstone wide open at the end of
Bourne
Ultimatum.
But why? it's the Alicia Vikander reason? Where it's just like, yeah, she's like, nah, this I don't like this stuff, so I'm going to help you out. Even though you could definitely kill me. Yeah, okay.
Okay. I swear to God, there was a point where she hints at the fact that they had a relationship. But it's not important. If anyone can answer this question for me, please, you know, fucking tweet at me. Does anyone else have any other things to say before we wrap up?
I was trying to remember. There was one other thing.
Oh, I remember. Alicia Vikander's fucking eyebrows could cut diamonds. Because this is a movie that lives in the close-up, and you get some real strong looks at her eyebrows, and they are fucking razor sharp. That's my final deep insight for this film.
I did appreciate that her hair was in a clip the entire movie, because I was like, cool, that's smart of them to actually, like, not try and play her beauty up. Because, I mean, look, a lot of films have, and this one is just like, nah, she's an analyst. Put her in a pantsuit.
Did you one better and didn't even give her a skull? So
this is true. yeah. So that's definitely something that I kind of appreciated. Just a surface level thing that was like, okay, cool. They're just gonna have her running around with her hair up in a clip the entire movie. Got it. Cool. Yeah.
She's constantly hunched over a computer. That hair would get annoying.
Yeah. Guys, sorry to say like one last thing, but one thing that we didn't talk about is did you guys get a sense about why Tommy Lee Jones thought it was fair to kill Riz Ahmed's character? You know, as soon as he says no, I mean, I guess we don't know the full extent of what he was going to reveal, but man, Tommy Lee Jones, he's very trigger happy.
Yeah, he's a real kill everyone and let God sort him out kind of guy. I don't know, because Riz Ahmed, you know, he basically has a Google Facebook insert. And,
sure.
You know, he got his seed money from the CIA and was about to tell people that. And Tommy Lee Jones didn't want people to know that, because I guess, you know, the same reason he doesn't want people to know they're collecting metadata. And then when Tommy Lee Jones is killed and Riz Ahmed is released from the hospital, Riz is like, I'm not going to tell people that because I guess I don't have to anymore and I still want to make money.
Yeah, but they assassinate him at a conference. They couldn't think of something, you know, a little more under the radar.
Well, I think it's, you know, maybe a false flag thing where they were going to say, oh, well, they were going to blame it on an Iraqi national.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I guess at that point you could say like, oh, well, this kid has been murdered and, you know, Tommy Lee Jones wanted to get himself shot and they were going to kill Heather Lee too. So, yeah, towards the end, being on that panel was not a great like life move for anyone.
Well,
but, yeah, I
did...
guess you could say at that point, like, oh, it's a lone wolf ISIS terrorist attack. We need more stuff.
One of my favorite little small details from that is Tommy Lee Jones and Heather Lee just, I guess they just happened to be in the same area because they didn't seem like they were going to Vegas together. So they just happened to be in the same place, right? And Tommy Lee Jones gets Heather Lee to like meet up with him. And he's like, oh, by the way, I got this big panel I got to go on to. And anytime I don't have the answer for like a technical question, I'm going to throw it to you. And I'm just like, bro, you got to give me like some heads up. Like, I got to prepare for this. Like, you can't just tell me like 20 minutes beforehand, hey, you're going to be on a panel and any super technical question that I can't answer, I'm throwing it to you. I was just like,
need some serious cramming.
I was just like, what is going on with this movie? Why does everything have to happen in 20 minutes? Like, it's just like, oh my God, are you serious right now?
I'm just surprised because Vincent Cassell's asset, you know, he lands in Greece very quickly, gets a car and then gets to those riots.
I love that. This is one thing that I did actually kind of know,
like no yeah, jet lag yeah. or anything.
He gets his stuff. He gets in the car. He does not have gloves on. And then by the time he's in the middle of the car chase, he's got driving gloves on. And I was like,
well, at some point you can just hit the cruise control, slip your gloves on.
I
have put a tie on while driving. So I'm all about getting dressed on the way.
I just imagine him sitting at a stoplight, like casually putting on his driving gloves and like someone looking over and realizing like, oh,
this is going to be my final thing. And then I'll take us all out. If any of these people who Jason Bourne needed to meet happened to live like an hour outside of any major metropolitan area, it would be so much easier because like he goes to meet a guy in Berlin and they're like, we have a team in Berlin, right? And it's like, yeah. But if he went to like the middle of nowhere, Nova Scotia, they'd be like, do we have anything in the area? And it's like, yeah. No, we've got to fly people up from New York. It's going to be a couple of hours. And it's like, damn it.
Yep.
Why
yep.
did he stop meeting people in major European cities? So that's the parting term. And I will once again say that if you're a fan of Jason Bourne in all of his filmic iterations and this seemed like a movie you'd want, there's nothing here that will disappoint you. You're going to get what you want. And well, sometimes in this crazy world of ours, that's all you need.
Yeah. And let's say we had a lot of fun talking about this movie, even though we shat all over it. So
yeah. And every time I did, I said, and yet I'm not upset that I saw this. Before we go out, let me just remind everyone that, again, the Film Stage show is supported by Mubi. That is our good friends, the curated online cinema streaming service with a selection of exceptional independent, classic, and award-winning films from around the world. Don't miss your chance to check out the Quay Brothers, as well as the 2003 remake of Zatoichi. I just said that wrong, didn't I? It's Zatoichi.
I don't know.
No,
I kind of think it's Zatoichi.
We don't even
don't
know how to spell or we don't even know how to say Cassell, so or Castle.
Yeah.
We're useless. We're useless.
We're completely useless. I'm surprised we need, even know how to say movie.
We know. We need Heather Lee in our ear to tell us.
We do. But yes, each day, movie will handpick a new film, so you will always have something new to watch, and you always know that it's going to be quality. You're no longer going to get halfway into a Netflix film that you've never heard of and then say, oh my God, this is terrible. What am I doing? So, Mubi, you have 1 month to watch everything from the day it posts, and you can try it free right now if you go to mubi.com/filmstage. Mubi's helping us out, guys. They're helping to sponsor us, and it would mean a lot to us if you went and gave them a whirl so that they know that we have the power to make you do things. That is mubi.com/filmstage. But that's all for today. So let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found in between now and the next episode. Bill Graham, why don't you kick us off?
You can find me driving around with the voice navigation of Heather Lee on Waze.
Oh my God, that would be such a good promo.
Yes.
Why didn't they do that?
I don't know. You can also find me on Twitter at CableBFG. You can find me writing about movies and doing interviews at the Film Stage, and also writing about movies at freshfiction.tv.
All right. Michael, your turn.
You can find me at...
Where can we find you?
You can see me displaying terrible technical literacy on Twitter at Snydell. You can also see my writing at the Film Stage and at Pace Magazine.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. Again, pretty much any social media network you find, if there's an at Brian J. Rowan, it's probably me. You can also find me on thefilmstage.com. You can find this show on Twitter at filmstageshow. You can find us on Facebook at thefilmstage. And you can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. Don't forget to check out mubi.com/filmstage. And ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next week. I'll be careful what you say, or you give yourself away. Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow.